DW, World in Progress. With Anca Rasper.
Thirty years after the demise of the Iron Curtain, how are people faring in Russia today?
We have to work much harder, but we're earning less money. These reforms are making me angry.
I still believe our country is strong. We've always managed to survive.
Find out more in this week's special documentary. Welcome to the show in Bonn, Germany. I'm Anke Rasper. 30 years after the end of the Cold War, the economic situation is becoming more difficult for many Russians. Along with steadily increasing prices, dissatisfaction is on the rise in the population. When the country's commodity-dependent economy started going downhill in 2013, many were hoping for economic reforms. But instead, the government decided for a military campaign and annexed the Crimean Peninsula from Ukraine, claiming it was finally bringing it back home to Russia. For a while, the Russian general public celebrated. But the euphoria wouldn't last. Then, after the presidential election in March 2018, Russians hoped the government would finally tackle urgent domestic matters and make improvements. But those hopes were in vain. Instead, the government has since pushed through a pension reform, raising the retirement age. Sabine Stör in Moscow sent us this in-depth report on the daily challenges of getting by in Russia. Conor Dillon presents her report.
Tatiana Ivanovna is picking up a few apples at the local market hall. Three apples for the equivalent of 1 euro. A bit pricey, but she thinks it's okay. The same could be said for everything in Russia these days, she thinks. Nevertheless, President Vladimir Putin is doing his best, says Tatiana. Her friend, Elena Fyodorovna, nods in agreement. The two little women, bundled up in a warm scarf and winter coat, are over 70 and have known each other for a very long time. Together, they stroll through the large market hall in Moscow's northeast, past vendors selling meat and fruit, past stalls offering toys and clothing. Tatiana is an eternal optimist. Elena, on the other hand, can be contemplative and, at times, critical. The two women stop to consider some eggs.
Look at that. 80 rubles. 110 rubles. It's incredibly expensive. Unbelievable. A year ago, eggs cost at most 50. And now it's twice as much. It's just too much.
Prices in Russia have been steadily rising for some time now, due in part to the flagging economy and rising inflation. Most recently, on January 1st, value-added tax increased from 18 to 20%. Elena has a pension that's equivalent to about 300 euros a month, just enough to get by. Anything extra, and she has to depend on the support of her family, something that has become all too common in Russia.
First, my son helped me out, then my daughter, and now my granddaughter. Our family has a very close relationship. Those who have the means do what they can to help others without fail.
Despite the support, she still isn't able to afford the necessary renovations for her one-room apartment. But at least there are some breaks. Like all pensioners, she can ride public transport for free, and she gets government support for telephone and other utilities. Others aren't so well off. Utility prices increased in Russia at the start of 2019, and they'll go up again on July 1st. Car taxes have increased, and self-employed people, everyone from cleaning ladies to private teachers, must now also pay a new tax. But what has many Russians feeling the squeeze is the constantly rising petrol prices, a 15% increase since last year. That's according to official information from the Russian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. After the presidential election in March 2018 and various successes abroad, particularly in Syria, many had hoped that President Vladimir Putin would turn his attention to his own people. Instead, June brought yet more disappointing news. Just in time for the FIFA World Cup, the Kremlin announced planned reforms to the pension system. Since January 1st, all Russians are now required to work 5 to 8 years longer. Raising the retirement age was an unpopular decision, and the Russian people made that clear throughout the summer, with protests as far as Vladivostok. The mood was also reflected in opinion surveys by the independent polling agency Levada Center, the only public opinion barometer in the country. Lev Gudkov, the director of the Levada Center, says the mood has soured since 2014.
Incomes have decreased by as much as 15%. At the same time, prices and taxes are increasing. The pension reform was the catalyst, with the public expressing its dissatisfaction with these changes. We've seen how support for the government since the presidential election has declined significantly. Instead, concern and uncertainty are spreading. People are disappointed by those in power and feel that social justice has been violated. Ironically, social justice is what initially formed the basis for Putin's support.
The two elderly women shopping at the market have also noticed the drop in living standards, though they don't want to talk about it. Do nothing to spoil the mood. That's the motto of Tatiana Ivanovna, especially not at the family dinner table.
Why should we talk about politics at the dinner table? We talk about good things, happy things. Why discuss politics?
Again and again, both women, who grew up in the years just after World War II, say the same thing. At least there's no war. But Elena remains thoughtful.
Well, of course we worry about it.
Tatiana, ever the optimist, chimes in.
I still believe our country is strong. We've always managed to survive.
The two women like to remember the good old days of the Soviet era. Back then, they say, pensions were higher, food was of better quality, and life was more stable. And yet, life today isn't so bad, says Tatiana, thinking back to the way things were in the 1990s.
When you look at how bad it was in the 90s and what life is like today, there's no comparison.
Russians over the age of 40 don't have fond memories of that decade. For them, life under Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev and his successor Boris Yeltsin was traumatic. In the West, Gorbachev is seen as a leading figure who helped bring about the end of the Cold War. In Russia, on the other hand, he is blamed for the collapse of the Soviet Union and the chaos that followed. Pavel, a man in his early 40s, lives with his small family in Troitsk, a suburb about an hour's drive southwest of Moscow. Out here, the air is cleaner, apartments are cheaper, and the area is very family-friendly. He doesn't like to think back to that time.
Back in the 1990s, it was as if we were living on a volcano. I was a student, and I didn't know from one day to the next whether I would have enough money to eat. My parents weren't earning anything, and even though I was working odd jobs, there still wasn't enough. Today, everything is much better compared to the 90s, and that wasn't so long ago.
Pavel, an athletic man with dark hair, radiates warmth. He's an engineer and makes a good living. And yet, he too has noticed that life is getting more and more expensive for his family. He and his wife, Yekaterina, are in the market for a new home. Their current apartment, a one-bedroom unit on the 7th floor of a high-rise next to the river, is getting a bit tight for the two of them and their children, 7-year-old Tanya and newborn Andrei. Cramped quarters like these are not unusual in Russia. Apartments are expensive. Yekaterina, 41, teaches Russian to foreigners at Lomonosov Moscow State University. At the moment, she's home on maternity leave, and the family is missing her salary. But she still manages to keep everyday life running smoothly, more or less, often a difficult task. And then there are the constantly changing laws and rising prices. Everyday life in Russia is always a struggle. Yet all this doesn't worry Yekaterina. For her, there are other things to worry about at the moment.
The death of relatives, of friends, sickness, loss, things that have a direct impact on life. Compared to these worries, politics and the economy don't seem quite so threatening.
What Russia is experiencing now isn't a crisis, says Yekaterina. Referring once again to the 1990s, she says Russia is far from that difficult time.
Times aren't easy. It's hard, but we can survive. I'm not going to start fighting in the streets. We had that in 1917, and you couldn't really call that a success. The revolution didn't end well. After that, we had perestroika in the late 1980s. How long must we continue to climb the barricades? Everyone here wants stability, peace, and prosperity. And we have patience. It's part of our national character.
Patience, she says, and faith that fate will provide. History has shown that Russians need both to survive. Pavel sighs.
We have to work much harder, but we're earning less money. And for the money that we do earn, we can buy fewer and fewer things. These reforms are making me angry. I'm well aware that my money is being taken away from me. That's money that could be used for my family, for education, for visits to the doctor. The money is simply being taken away from me.
Lev Gudkov, the 72-year-old director of the Levada Center, understands Pavel's frustrations. He says the state is struggling to find ways to stay in the black.
There isn't enough money for the war in Syria, for the fighting in the Donbas region, to refit the army. All that requires huge sums. If you compare the military and the social spending, we actually have the budget of a country at war in a time of peace. Russians understand that fact. But they don't understand why this should be happening at the expense of their prosperity.
The young family from Troitsk, the area with many playgrounds, trees, and high-rises, is looking for a larger apartment, one they can afford. Such a thing is hard to find in Russia, especially in the Moscow area. Mainly because interest rates on home loans are so high, explains Pavel.
They're incredibly high. I don't think any other developed country in the world has rates as high as 10 to 12% per year. It's incredible. In the end, we'll have to pay double the price of the apartment. It's terrible.
As of mid-January, the state-owned Sberbank, Russia's largest bank, has again raised rates by 1 percentage point. All they can do, Yekaterina says, is work harder. According to Gudkov of the Levada Center, nearly 3/4 of the Russian people live hand-to-mouth, without savings, without a safety net. Russia has no functioning social system. If you don't work, you don't have money. A quarter of the Russian people could at least hold out for a few months, though that figure is dropping. More and more people are afraid to lose their jobs, and faith in the future is practically non-existent. What the future holds for a society like this remains to be seen.
Right now, there's still uncertainty over the future and what the state will come up with next. And yet, it's clear to everyone that they'll either continue to suppress the opposition or squeeze the people as much as possible so that the state can solve its financial problems.
Banks have reported that more and more Russians are being forced to borrow money to maintain their standard of living. Disappointment is growing, a sentiment confirmed by Ekaterina Shulman, one of Moscow's most sought-after political scientists. As the 40-year-old explains in a Moscow cafe, the euphoria over the annexation of the Crimea Peninsula in 2014 has subsided.
Patriotic propaganda сыграла против себя самой.
The Kremlin's patriotic propaganda has, in the end, worked against itself. First of all, it got citizens thinking about what the state actually does, what it owes to the people, and what they owe to the state. Secondly, it created the euphoric sentiment that we Russians can do anything, at least when it comes to foreign policy. But then people began to think, if we can do everything outside of Russia, why can we achieve so little at home? People have begun to see patriotism as a duty, as a call to action to make life better and help the country.
But how? That, says Schulman, remains unclear. In an attempt to turn attention away from the problems at home, the state is trying to distract people with news channels that largely toe the state line. But that won't satisfy Russians for very long, says Schulman. They want real change, and that includes justice and individual respect, even if nobody knows exactly what the outcome will be. Criticism of President Putin is growing, says Schulman. According to the latest Levada survey, only 60% of the Russian population supports the president, his lowest ever poll numbers. More and more people are holding Putin personally responsible for the worsening conditions. Until recently, it's always been the fault of the president's functionaries, his incompetent staff. Even engineer Pavel and his friends are disappointed in Putin.
They're wreaking havoc, raising the retirement age, raising taxes. Even though oil prices are falling, the price of gas is constantly increasing. Every month I'm spending more and more to fill the car. I'm feeling the effects. Life is getting more and more expensive.
Pavel, his wife, and his friends no longer believe what the Kremlin and state-owned television choose to tell them. He says he didn't vote for Putin in the March election, but doesn't think his vote changed anything. Back in Moscow, we meet up with 22-year-old Anastasia. She's worried about the direction Russia is going and doesn't see a future here. After completing a degree in marketing, she's ready to leave and continue her studies abroad in Germany. Anastasia isn't alone. According to the survey institute Ziom, 1 in 3 Russians in her age group want to leave the country. In 2017, the State Statistics Service reported that nearly 400,000 Russians of all ages left the country. The unofficial number is likely much higher, according to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Since 2014, it's become increasingly difficult to live in the Russian capital, says Anastasia, even though she and her parents are financially well off.
If you don't have any confidence in the future, if you're afraid of arbitrary decisions by officials such as policemen, many end up avoiding those in charge. Even if they have problems, they'll think twice before going to the police, especially when it comes to difficulties with other authorities. When it comes to the tax office, for example, people tend to simply ignore their problems rather than deal with them. Finding a solution usually costs lots of money and time, and there's no guarantee, no chance of a positive outcome.
Transparency International points out that Russia's democratic institutions are often being replaced by imitations, institutions that only seem democratic but don't actually comply with constitutional norms. The country's laws are purposely vague, meaning courts can often interpret them the way they think the Kremlin wants them to be interpreted. Russians have learned to use this ambiguity and inconsistency for their own benefit, and to play authorities against each other, explains Ekaterina Schulman.
The state authorities and law enforcement agencies don't offer support. On the contrary, they can be dangerous. That's why you have to be very careful with them. In order to survive in Russia and achieve your goals, it's best to support yourself. In education, health, and even to a certain degree, personal defense.
People should have their own network to help them find the right people to contact if things go wrong.
Anastasia says she's finding it increasingly difficult to watch as Russian courts do nothing to protect human rights, as demonstrations are roughly broken up by authorities and activists are arrested. Her anger, her hopelessness, is clear. She's afraid to join the protests and suspects she would be denied a chance to leave the country if she did. Ekaterina Shulman knows this fear is justified.
The price for protest is high. This is a conscious decision by the state. After the demonstrations in 2011 and 2012, the Kremlin increased pressure on protesters to make them pay for any form of dissent. The reason that people, apparently, aren't going out to protest isn't a lack of awareness or that they agree with what the state is doing. Rather, it's because they know that by weighing the risks and the benefits of any dissent, they know they'll likely achieve nothing, but they'll definitely be punished for their actions.
It has even become risky to speak out on the internet, says Anastasia. Even there, new laws are restricting civil rights.
People are afraid of being tracked online. Many, including me, hope that we simply aren't that interesting to the authorities. But there have been alarming cases where people have been arrested for simply liking something or for sharing a link. Criminal proceedings have been launched over negative statements about those in charge, over comments interpreted as slander or extremism.
Многие высказывания против власти могут восприниматься как экстремистские.
People have been sentenced to prison terms for online behavior, in particular for sharing memes, caricatures of well-known politicians, or for expressing their dissatisfaction. Levada director Lev Gudkov points out that today, even Russians who were better off in previous years are joining the ranks of the dissatisfied. And that includes workers in the industrial cities, places mostly dependent on one industry, who are having to cope with the fact that demand for their products is decreasing. Take Magnitogorsk, for example, on the southern end of the Ural Mountains near the border with Kazakhstan. It's a city of almost 500,000 inhabitants where, for years, the main industry has been steel. Depression is the overarching mood here, says Gudkov. People are acutely aware of the new cuts in social policy, and the city's infrastructure is crumbling. Gudkov says the dwindling quality of life has begun affecting people here too, and they're increasingly withdrawing their support from Putin. But those in charge are preventing them from organizing and expressing their discontent, and not just by physical means.
Propaganda, manipulation of the public consciousness, control over the media, all this contributes to the repression. And it has the desired effect. People become disoriented and have the feeling they can't do anything to change their circumstances. The predominant attitude then becomes, life is difficult, but it can be endured.
Endured, and often alone. Russia is lacking one grand vision to join its people together. The country is big, and many were traumatized in the waning years of the Soviet Union and the chaotic 1990s. Nobody is helping people to deal with that trauma. One way would be to examine the past, but that isn't happening. Instead, those in charge are covering everything with a cloak of patriotism, constantly bringing up past successes. Even Anastasia was a believer back in 2014, when the Russian leadership annexed the Crimea from Ukraine. But then came the awakening that nothing was being done to help improve the lives of ordinary Russians. Yet, there are those who still believe the empty promises, says Anastasia.
Even my family is split. We try to completely avoid the topic. Unlike me and my mother, my father is convinced that nobody has the right to judge Putin's actions. And if someone does find fault with the president, my father doesn't see this as objective criticism. He sees it as treason.
Объективная критика это воспринимается как предательство.
Her family's situation is relatively common. Added to that is the fact that Russia's economy has been deteriorating for years. For 2019, the World Bank has predicted growth of just 1.5%. That's not enough to keep up with other industrialized nations. The ruble is expected to remain weak, and investments from abroad are drying up, due in part to sanctions. Increasingly, Russians are of the view that their leaders are spending more money on themselves and foreign policy projects rather than on their own citizens. And that has had serious consequences, as Lev Gudkov explains.
Social relationships are breaking apart. The majority has only one goal, basic survival, and to keep from losing what they have left. That's the main challenge, not the improvement of living conditions. That has led to an extreme fragmentation of society, to passivity and an apolitical attitude. People don't want to get involved in politics because they don't believe it will change anything.
In the past, the Kremlin has always come up with a foreign adventure, as Ekaterina Shulman calls it, to help win over the population. Missions to Syria, Ukraine, Crimea. But today, she says, frustration with the government is so deep that another such adventure would do little to change the mood. Society is changing.
People are coming together online, united by common interests. These experiences of mutual support, information exchange, and collective action, this is something new for Russia. It started with Classmates, a platform that is especially popular in Russia and has continued on various chat sites.
More and more are taking part in online petitions, speaking out against the pension reform, the arrest of innocent people, or in support of animal welfare. They allow like-minded people to come together and express their opinions. But, says Ekaterina Shulman, the political elite has remained stagnant, and the gap between it and the greater society is only getting bigger. She believes that the situation will hold for a few more years at most. But then, the mood in Russia will shift.
This newly developed mass consciousness is sustainable. It will not disappear. And it will have an effect on the political process. The government will have to adapt. There have already been early signs. The regional governorship elections this past autumn, for example. Those at the top were very dissatisfied with the results. In one region, then, the inevitable happened. In the other, there was resistance, at least at first, and then came the inevitable. That's typical for our political machine, where it expects no resistance. It will move forward, ruthlessly. If it meets resistance, it's ready to pause or even just step back. And so it will continue, at least for a while.
And then, Shulman makes a point that is especially important to her, particularly when speaking with foreign media.
Bear in mind, our society is more civilized than our government. The upper levels are responsible for, let's say, a set of particular people belonging to a particular generation and a particular social class. They are entirely different from the younger generations, even from members of their own generation who have grown up in a different society with a different education and training.
Russia's leadership is lacking a vision for the future of its country. And many Russians are watching closely how things change. Many feel disappointed and increasingly frustrated in a society where many now feel left abandoned by the system. At the same time, many romanticize the memories of the Soviet era. One hope unites them all, the hope for a miracle. Because, after all, what else is there?
This special documentary was compiled by Sabine Stöhr. The presenter was Connor Dillon. Thanks for your interest. You can also download this and other editions of World in Progress from our Media Center at dw.com or go to iTunes. We'll be back next week. For today, all the best from our studio team here in Bonn and me, Anke Rasper. Take care.